97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
I am for defunding the police, and for me, it's a reallocation of funds.
It does not appear she has made any reasonable efforts to prevent the resulting chaos.
This didn't work out.
The Biden administration knows what it needs to do, and it says, well, we'll do anything except what works. It's a special kind of stupid.
God save the Queen, man.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Thursday has actually picked up some speed, so just know that we are less than 24 hours out from a major impact. Actually, less than 12 hours out, so that's going to happen. Just south of the eye wall is going to likely lead to the most significant storm surge.
This is going to be a storm of historic proportions with wind, water, and rain.
It certainly doesn't look good. Sue Thomas is back with us this afternoon. Fred, the Hall of Famer as well. We had your friend Steve Jervey on yesterday, and he was great from Tampa. And he's kind of, you know, in the target zone right now. The only good news is he said he was in Zone C. A, B are evacuation areas, and he didn't have to get out, Sue.
Well, he's a meteorologist in Florida, so you can imagine what his place is. It is not on the beach, and he's got it fortified in every possible way. And he's, you know, if you go to his house, he'll say, okay, and here's, we've got this, just in case the water comes up. So he is prepared as one can be.
Well, and you know, we have a couple of people that are going to join us here this afternoon. Fred, do we have someone who's trying to ride this thing out as
We're
well?
We're going to get her tomorrow.
Okay, because that doesn't seem like a smart thing to do. It really doesn't at this point. We do have Ryan Gable this afternoon. He's the captain of Sea Trek 1. And that's a charter boat near Fort Myers. He moved his vessel upriver. Now, is this the guy that we talked to with Ian a couple years ago or a different guy?
Oh, he rode out Ian and Helene in the boat. So I think that is him.
Okay, yeah. And he had quite a story from Ian a couple years ago. And Deborah Donzi is the one who owns the boat. And she lives here in the St. Louis area. So we'll hook up with Ryan in the 4 o'clock hour and also cover the hurricane from different perspectives this afternoon. Dave Murray's going to join us a little bit after 4:07 as well. Hopefully kill me this afternoon. He's busy. We're going to see if he can jump on with us. We haven't been able to. Fred's trying to get a hold of him.
It's fluid.
Well, in fairness, that happens with Brian. I mean, the guy is working so much, but usually we can pin him down by the time that the show starts, and that has not happened today. Sue, how was jury duty yesterday?
Well, here's the good news. They have redone it in the city of St. Louis. Here's what they used to do. They would call, and mind you, all of us who go to jury duty in the city have been there 80,000 times before you, because you go, we're professionals. You go every 3 years. So instead of calling you on Monday in this huge group and you sit there for 2 days if you don't get called, they have broken it up into small groups. So I didn't go until Tuesday. And when I sat down, they were super friendly and they were thanking us for being there. But then I got called in the first group and we went upstairs for voir dire, which I only know because I watched the TV show Bull, what that means. And they bring us into the courtroom and it turns out I've never been on a criminal trial, but that's what this was.
You've only been called like for civil cases.
Correct.
Interesting.
And they have you fill out a form. Have you ever been on a jury? Before you even get there, you do it online. Have you been a foreman? And I'm like, yep.
Oh, right.
I hope that doesn't mean anything, like I should do it again.
And it does.
We sat there, and I can't even say what it is now until the trial is over, because I was a potential jurist. But you sit there, and they ask questions of all of you to try to, you know, pick out, the prosecution does and the defense does, and they try to narrow it down. So they kept us there, sent us out to lunch, brought us back in, and then filled in the jury thing. And you just sit there going, please don't be me. Please don't be me. And it wasn't. But, yeah, they sat a jury for it, and it's a criminal trial that started. They were supposed to start maybe late yesterday when they let the rest of us go.
But you're not supposed to say anything about it?
Uh-uh.
Why not? I mean, if you get arrested or something, held in contempt, it'd be good for the show. Joe Holland would likely write about it at the Post-Dispatch. You got to think about the show every once in a while, Sue. I'm just going to say. Come on. Step up your game.
Let me just say this. I am glad not to be on it. And good luck to those who are. And you do want a jury of your peers, but boy, Man, that series. And they are so much more. It used to be we'd go and watch like a video of Robin Smith tell us stuff and she was slightly angry. And now it's
Robin Smith, the former Channel 4.
Yeah, former Channel right. 4, and then maybe a little bit of Julius Hunter. And but now it's they really have streamlined it as best they can.
Well, look at that. That's good to know. Yeah. It's been a while. I said, you know, I went a couple times when I lived in the city, and then I've gotten out of it in the county at least once, and I don't remember ever being called again. So I think one time. And actually, that might have been Jeffco. It might not even been because I lived in Jeffco before I moved back to St. Louis County.
I got you.
So that's interesting. Well, we're glad you're back. We missed you yesterday. We did cover quite a bit related to CBS News and some things that happened. I think you're going to find this interesting. We're going to get back into it this afternoon. Have you heard anything about this Tony DeCoppel thing?
No, I don't know anything.
Okay, this is pretty good, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it now because we did it during the monologue, but there's a guy by the name of Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a liberal, you know, activist, claims to be a journalist, has been a left-winger for many years, did an interview on his new book about Israel, which, by the way, doesn't mention Hamas at all. Like, Hamas isn't mentioned. Iran isn't mentioned. None of this stuff. So Tony DeCoppel, who is the, you know, CBS morning show co-host with Gayle King. By the way, Gayle King is looking like she's 90 years old. Well, I was watching this clip. When I was pulling that clip yesterday, Fred, I'm not even making this up. I kept thinking, who's that old woman sitting next to Tony? It was Gayle King. She didn't look as good. I don't watch that show, so maybe it's happened over time. You know, anyway.
I do know what you're talking about now because I did hear part of that later. And it's very interesting. How dare they actually do real balanced news?
Right. Well, so what happened was is he did the interview, and then the higher-ups on CBS, they did a conference call to talk to their, you know, reporters to complain about all this, and it sounded like this.
You know, the legacy of CBS News is built on a foundation of neutrality. And we owe it to those who came before us, to ourselves and our viewers, to maintain that standard to the best of our ability.
I mean, that's just comical. It really is. Neutrality on CBS News. This is the same, you know, group that hosted last week's vice presidential debate. Did you watch that? I'd love to ask that woman who runs the news division that question. Wait, how are you actually ripping on Tony DeCoppel because little young progressive, you know, do-gooders in your newsroom said, we didn't like Tony's question of Ta-Nehisi, right? So that really is kind of amazing when you think about it. And that's the reason that they want to take. That's the reason that they want to take him out. But everybody else gets to do what they want. Now, here's the other thing that was kind of interesting about this, Sue. And, you know, I've mentioned Bill Whitaker's name quite a bit at 60 Minutes. And I've said you can't really trust 60 Minutes because we've kind of seen examples of that here in St. Louis with Mr. Whitaker in particular doing a story about Kim Gardner that was completely unfair to our area. And they never came back and rectified that when she was finally booted out of office. But he sits down with Kamala, actually asked her some tough questions the other night. And, and I don't know that she did very well.
That.
Now, last night she was on Stephen Colbert's show.
You asked for Miller highlight. You asked for Miller highlight.
Okay, the last time I had beer was at a baseball game with Doug.
Cheers.
There
you go. That tastes like the beautiful city of Milwaukee,
the
Wisconsin.
Champagne and beer.
Well, it's weird that she's not drinking Budweiser or Busch Light because Missouri's not a swing state like Wisconsin. So that seems rather convenient. Stephen asked a question last night.
You are a member of the president administration. Mm-hmm. Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of.
Yes.
But also, I think it's important to say with, you know, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
Okay. I don't even know. That's her answer.
And people clap. I'm like, what is happening?
I don't know. I really don't know at this point. I'm going to try to hold on to hope here, Sue. I really am. You know, I've been thinking about this race for a long time. We all have been thinking about this race. We are now less than 4 weeks away from Election Day. People are voting right now. This week, they're starting to early vote in some areas. But I'm this may be bad news for Trump because my gut checks are usually very, very wrong. But I am feeling that there is momentum in his direction. Just if for no other reason, just looking at the country right now and how misguided it's been over the last few years. And people know that. They feel the difference when it comes to crime, certainly the economy. They try to spin this every way they can. It tells, and I think it should tell us a lot, that Harris is going on and doing more interviews because I think she has to. There has been you know, feedback in the polling that shows that people don't really know who she is and they don't trust her. So now she's out. And you can't, from a political strategy standpoint, you can't necessarily fault her for going on the comfortable shows because they know what they're doing. They're trying to get, you know, those audiences engaged, even though you might be able to say, look, those people are voting for Harris and Biden anyway. Well, they're not voting for Trump, maybe, but that doesn't mean they're going to show up on Election Day. So turnout is a big part of the entire equation. But, you know, one of the things that they're doing right now, and I don't think it's going to work, they're trying to claim, the administration is, oh, here, this is good. They did this a couple hours ago. They did this FEMA briefing. And during the FEMA briefing, they aired this on Fox Live. You had Harris on the phone. It was a video thing. And Biden as well. So you had the FEMA directors and all the emergency management people giving updates on the hurricane, on Milton. And then every once in a while, Harris would ask a question or Joe would ask a question. They were the dumbest questions because I don't even know if they were really paying attention. They just wanted to make sure that their voice was in there. Now, at one point, I don't know what to make of this because there was a point where she sort of, she kind of covers her mouth here. This is what it sounds
like. We really got to watch those areas and those communities. So it takes quite a while for that water to...
You can hear in the background say it's a live broadcast. Some people are saying, well, she's being fed the questions, et cetera. I don't know about that. That just could have been a distraction. But it was hilarious. And, you know, Sue, one thing that this reminded me of when I was watching the president and the vice president today with FEMA is how much they did that a few weeks ago with Helene. Remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wait.
Oh, I'm
no.
sorry.
If you missed anything, podcast The Mark Reardon Show.
Stop it. That was not supposed to happen there. My goodness. I was supposed to do this. I was looking for this thing here. Yeah. That did not happen. So the mantra now is about disinformation. That's what they're saying. Anything that you've heard about a lapse in the response or not a prompt response by the federal government, well, that's just disinformation. That is just misinformation. Uh-huh. You got Mayorkas out there saying this. You have Harris and Biden as well. Here's Mayorkas.
That false information is only hurting survivors in need of help, and it is also hurting the first responders who are so bravely risking their lives to deliver that help.
Now, one thing that they're pointing to, and unfortunately I'm going to have to agree on this one, and I don't really understand it. I've avoided over the years. There's certain members of Congress that I think are crazy. Mary Miller in Illinois is one of them. All right. Every once in a while, she's on the right side of the issues, but she's kind of crazy. The people in Illinois don't like me to say that, but she's crazy. So is Marjorie Taylor Greene. And, you know, I like her every once in a while because she stands up on the right issues and she has a hell of a workout routine. She really does. I'm impressed by that. They did a story on her on 60 Minutes and she's got guns that are bigger than mine, which, by the way, for those of you listening and you haven't seen me, it wouldn't be too difficult to do. Right. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, and this is the other thing. Maybe some of you can help me out there. OK, maybe some of you can help me. I'm always looking for a different side of the story. Right. I really am. Biden Harris say something. Wait a second. I'm going to try to check that. My gut tells me that when things don't make sense, there has to be more to the story. And with Trump, it's almost always the case. And a couple of perfect examples would be what happened at the debate with their eating and cats and dogs. He has difficulty sort of expanding on something like that and explaining it in a concise fashion because it's a little difficult to do that. And he throws that out there and everybody jumps on
right.
it and does stuff like that. Right. Well, that's something that happens certainly with misinterpretation of Trump. And maybe there's no better example than Charlottesville. Right. Because the very fine people thing was completely taken out of context. So maybe this was taken out of context. I don't know. I really don't. But have you heard this? She thinks that, here's her tweet. I'll just read her tweet from October 7th, 7:26 p.m. Climate change is the new COVID, which, by the way, I don't disagree with that. Ask your government if the weather is manipulated or controlled. Did you ever give permission to them to do it? Are you paying for it? Of course you are. I don't know what. So she tweets something out and she says that this happened on CBS 9 years ago, that they were and there's a Norm O'Donnell clip where they're talking about how lasers were controlling the weather. I don't know a whole lot about that, but she sort of doubles down on these conspiracy theories. Maybe someone can guide me into information from MGT that doesn't make her look crazy, because that makes her look crazy. And by the way, it makes Republicans look ridiculous because it gives Harris and Biden the opportunity to say, look at these kooks, when they're the kooks, we know that, Look at these kooks on the right. They think that the government is somehow controlling and manipulating the weather and causing Category 4 and 5 hurricanes. It's nonsense. And she should realize that. If she's got half a brain, she should realize that saying things like that, especially 4 weeks before an election, is not going to help you very much. I don't know what the win is there. But again, she's crazy. Now, one more crazy story here for us this afternoon before we get to, I think John Lott's coming up here. This is a University of Kansas, a KU down the road there, and not exactly down the road, Lawrence, Kansas, not too far away from here, would be about 5 hours, just west of Kansas City. Here's what this professor said to his class this week.
Guys are smarter than girls. You got some serious problems. That's what frustrates me. There are going to be some males in our society that will refuse to vote for a potential female president because they don't think females are smart enough to be president. We could line all those guys up and shoot them. They clearly don't understand the way the world works. Did I say that? Scratch that from the recording. I don't want the deans hearing that I said that.
Well, unfortunately, it went viral, and the deans have heard it. And here's the statement from the University of Kansas via their ex, formerly Twitter, a statement from the university regarding a classroom video. The university is aware of a classroom video in which an instructor made an inappropriate reference to violence. The instructor is being placed on administrative leave pending further investigation. The instructor, this is my favorite part, the instructor offers his sincerest apologies and deeply regrets the situation. Are you kidding me? You could hear his tone right there.
Exactly.
One thing we know for sure is that he doesn't deeply regret anything unless his ass is canned. Then he might deeply regret, you know, joking about it, right? Saying, oh, I don't want it on the tape. They say his intent was to emphasize his advocacy for women's rights and equality. Sure it was, dude. And he recognizes that he did a very poor job of doing so. Well, on that, I'm going to agree. The university has established a process for situations like this and will follow that process. Now, I get that you have to have some sort of due process when you're an elite professor at a university. But you know what? The process should be here. Your ass is canned. Find another job, hopefully not in academia, but they'll all protect him. They love this stuff. So they'll kind of find a way to say, oh, he went through the process. He's so sorry about this. We're going to let him indoctrinate the students further. For the record, Fred did an outstanding job with Sue's News yesterday,
by the way.
And you know what we were thinking, though? We got young Ethan, our new producer here. And I think Ethan, he's got a little experience on the air. I think he can do Sue's News.
Yeah, he could be Friday.
Well, I'm thinking that we're gonna train him to do that, and I'm gonna put a little shock collar on him or something like that. And
then
if I don't like the direction of Sue's News, we may shock him. By the way, I don't know if I told you this. Maybe I did on Monday, but I have to take Friday off, and you're off. I know on Friday, but I did have to take Friday off. So I think it's Ryan Recker who's gonna be here on Friday. Hey, John Lott is back with us this afternoon, and he's been a guest many, many times before on the topic of crime because he's great at crime and really breaking down the numbers in particular. But this is a topic about migrant crime numbers in particular because we know that ICE came out with this a couple of weeks ago, and it was kind of shocking, the numbers that we heard of criminals that have been released into this country. Then the administration comes back and tries to, you know, clarify everything, of course. John is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, joins us on 97.1 FM Talk. Mr. John Lott, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what did you find? You're great at doing this research. So, you know, ICE comes out. They said, and Tony Gonzalez from Texas exposes this, 435,000-plus convicted criminals, 225,000 people with pending criminal charges. That gets out there. People are outraged. But then the White House wants to spin it. So what have you found to be the truth here, John?
Well, there are a couple things to point out. One is you have to look at what the percent is of these non-detained individuals. And it turns out that about 9% of the 7.4 million non-detained individuals have criminal records. In fact, the murder rate by these non-detained individuals. So first of all, maybe I should back up a second. So you have people coming into the country. The government processes them. And the vast majority of them, they've led into the country. Now, you have two groups of people that are processed, those that voluntarily turn themselves in, and that's about 80% of the total, and those that are caught. Now, it's pretty clear that the ones who voluntarily turn themselves in, you're probably not very concerned about. I mean, if they were murderers or rapists in their home countries, they'd be concerned that they could get caught,
right,
and be stopped. And so, but the thing is, what that doesn't include are the so-called gotaways, which are in the millions. These are people that we see coming across the border and we don't catch. And then what could be many millions more, which ones we never even see come across the border. During the Biden administration, you've had over 90% of the border agents who were normally patrolling the border pulled off of that to go and handle processing for the people that were coming in. And also, the passive monitoring system in large parts of the border has been broken and down. So we have no clue how many of those. And those are the ones who are trying to avoid turning themselves in, who are the ones who probably have an even higher rate. So that 9% is probably a real underestimate of the problem that you have with the, you know, the total illegal immigrants that are coming into the country. But, you know, there's another thing to point out, too, and that is one of the spins that they've had on this, say, well, this occurs across multiple administrations.
Right, right.
And that's true. But what you have to do is you have to look at how people were checked across different administrations. So, for example, during the Trump administration, we had Remain in Mexico. And what happened was the Customs and Immigration Service did the background checks on people. And that's different than the background checks that were done under the Biden administration, which were done by ICE. The Customs and Immigration Services, part of their role was to go and check the home countries of the people that were coming in to check their criminal records. Under the Biden administration, there was no checking of the home country records for these individuals. So, you know, it's not too surprising that you're going to find out that they have criminal records after you've let them into the country, after you've decided not to detain them there. In fact, it may even be that we haven't even discovered all of the ones that were there, and even that 9% may be an underestimate for that reason, too. But, you know, they never would have made it, you know, from the Remain in Mexico. They never would have been allowed in under the Trump administration if they had criminal records in their home countries and a check with those home countries had revealed that information. It's very different systems. And, you know, not only do we have so many more illegals coming in, and not only are they checked differently, but, you know, the problem is basically occurring during the Biden administration, even though it's true you have some people getting through during earlier administrations.
John Lott is back with us. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. So a couple things here. One thing that you reported is this took 6 months for ICE to even come out with these numbers that Congress was requesting. And then you also mentioned, I don't know if I know much about this, this seems like an undercovered aspect of this, that there was a guy from San Diego, a Border Chief Patrol Agent, Aaron Heitke, who testified. You said in your report, he said the administration ordered him not to publicize the arrests of illegal border crossers identified as having ties to terrorism. Talk about a red flag.
Right, yeah. So, right. Well, I mean, it raises questions about any of the data that the Biden administration is putting out on this stuff. If they're specifically ordering border agents to essentially hide data on bad people coming into the country, then even the numbers that they're given, this 9% of these non-detained individuals being, you know, having criminal records, or the fact that the murder rate for these non-detained individuals is at least 50% higher than the murder rate for Americans normally. You know, you don't know what to trust anymore. You just know that these are probably very conservative estimates of the problem. Even with the fact that we're talking overwhelmingly people who voluntarily turned themselves in, and just a small portion, 20%, being ones that were caught that, you know, hadn't voluntarily turned themselves in. Because that's probably where most of the problem is for that 9% comes from that 20% there.
One of the things that you mentioned in your reporting on this is that, you know, the president and the vice president, they have the authority to call for expedited extradition for criminals, right? But they're not doing that. And they're actually, right. Are you saying they're actually going in the other direction, making it more difficult to extradite?
Yeah, they're making it more difficult.
How does that solve anything,
I don't know, but she's claiming that she's going to be tough on the border when she gets selected president. I mean, obviously, she could take care of these types of things right now. She could use expedited extradition right now on criminals. They could be going and searching for them. They could go and have ICE, you know, actually being involved in catching these people and deporting them. But, you know, they have other priorities that they want to go and deal with.
Yeah, she has to go on The View and Stephen Colbert. That's the priority right now. While I have here, John, you know, one of the things that gets discussed a lot in this presidential race is crime. And the other side tries to spin these crime numbers. Look, I'm in a city right now that has a lot of crime issues, and we've got issues with reporting. You and I have talked about that before. Even the federal database has been off. So when it comes to the claim that they keep making here that, you know, violent crime is actually down, most of these areas are really down the last couple of years. How do you still respond to that?
Well, it's interesting. So there are two main measures of crime that we have. We have the FBI data on crimes reported to police, and then we have the National Crime Victimization data, which tries to get a measure of total crime. And the thing is, people have been focusing on just crimes reported to police. Well, we know the vast majority of crimes, about 60% of violent crimes aren't reported to police. We know about 70% of property crimes aren't reported to police. The amazing thing, and it didn't get any news coverage, is that even the FBI reported crime data has been revised. So in 2022, originally the FBI claimed that there had been a 2.1% drop in reported violent crimes to the police. And just last month, they revised those 2022 numbers. And rather than a 2.1% drop, which is what the media has been reporting for the last year when they've had these headlines that say, you know, violent crime is down, but people mistakenly think it's increased, that they've now changed it from a 2.1% drop to a 4.5% increase. But what people have to understand is that even that 4.5% is an underestimate of it. And there are lots of problems with it. I'll give you one example. In many parts of the country, if you call up police, 911, and report a crime, they'll ask you, is the criminal there right now? Is it an emergency? And if you tell them that the criminal's already left the crime scene, they'll say, okay, well, you can come down to the police station, wait in line, and we'll have a police report filled out. Well, what happens is that, you know, a few years ago, they would have sent out a police car. They're making it more time-consuming, more costly for you to go and report crimes now than it was a few years ago. And there's going to be a few people, at least a few people, some who previously would have reported crimes, who are saying now it's not worth it. And so if you look at the measure of total crime during the Biden administration, it increased by 55%. We've never had such a huge increase over any 3-year period in the entire 51 years that they've been recording that data. Nothing even close. In fact, the next largest increase over 3 years occurred in 2006, and that was a 27% increase. So this is slightly more than twice as large as the largest previous increase that had ever been recorded in terms of changes in total violent crime.
And I think,
you know, people see this.
Yeah, they do. They feel it. They're absolutely they do. And that's why, you know, you said earlier, it's hard to trust the experts. The experts are wrong so often, and they try to spin these things. John, awesome as usual. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Have a great week.
Thank you very much.
Let me give you a little example of how the media covers one story versus the way that the alternative media may cover the same story. So here, you know, I just was Googling this because I'm going to play you a sound clip that's really, really funny with Trump and these guys from this podcast that's called Flagrant. And a couple of guys that I'm probably too old to know who they are. Their names are Andrew. Let's see here. I know that we pulled this. No, I can't find it because the thing is different. I'll find it here in a second. But two comedians, Sue. And they're asking Trump questions. And the way that the New Republic covered this is hilarious. This is what happened when I was looking. Hey, Ethan, show me where those are, just because my brain is not working properly. And just show me where those clips are so I know what I'm doing here. That's on my fault. I apologize. So I was Googling their names because I was unfamiliar with them. Andrew Schultz and Oshkosh. What's his last name?
Singh.
Ashkenaz Singh. Like, you know, Singh.
Gotcha.
VJ Singh would be like, I did work with a host in Wisconsin that called him VJ Singh on a commercial. Dear. So then I always started calling him VJ Singh, professional golfer for people who don't know. So these guys are stand-up guys. I don't know them, right? But when I Googled it, just because, Sue, I was trying to figure out who they were.
Well, sure.
One of the first things that comes up is a piece that's in the New Republic, which is a liberal, you know, rag out there. And it says, podcast hosts laugh in Trump's face as he struggles to defend rambling. These guys were laughing because Trump was funny. That's why they were laughing.
Oh, that's
and at the
funny.
End of the article, they say Trump's disastrous appearance comes as his team launches criticism at Kamala Harris. You tell me if this is a disastrous appearance, because I think it needs to be played more often.
You're TikTok Jack.
You know, this is a little new world. I call him, his name is Jack. I call him TikTok Jack. I'm good with names, you know.
You are. You're very good.
There you go.
Pocahontas.
Yeah.
We have names.
What about, and there was, you, Tampon Tim was good. What about,
Tim,
is
the
that?
The problem with Tampon Tim, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
In other words.
It's a mouthful.
It's a lot. Yeah. Tampon. And you can't stutter it through when you fall. It's really a lousy word to say.
Yeah.
But it's quite accurate.
Does that sound like a disastrous appearance?
No.
Seems like they're having a pretty good time with one another.
There are some, like Comrade Kamala. It's a little hard to say. She's Comrade because she's obviously a communist.
Yeah.
She's horrible. So I call her Comrade. And it's not bad. But when you put the names together, it's a little, you got to be able to pume. You got to be able to put it out there. But we have a lot of good ones. A lot of them I can't go into with you because some of my best ones are from the Republican primaries.
And
they're all friends of mine now.
Yeah, so like Little Marco and stuff like that. I thought that was great. And he has this ability. This is something I think that does bleed through to the electorate. And this is maybe where this is going to get decided. Because think about a moment like that. It comes off as Trumpian Trump, right? This is what he does. He's genuine. Actually, those are moments that he really kind of shines because he has a sense of humor. Now we've seen Kamala Harris do Stephen Colbert, The View. You missed that yesterday,
Sue. Boy.
She's doing a couple of podcasts as well, and she's cackling and laughing. And it's not... Some of it's not awful. I mean, you're trying to present more of a human side. She's talking about, you know, cooking and family holidays and stuff like that. But there's no real genuine moments with Kamala Harris that I hear.
No.
And with Trump, it's just kind of natural. You feel like she's doing everything she's doing. And I get it. This is what politicians do, is to try to redefine herself in the eyes of the country because the election is 4 weeks off. And you saw this today, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, FEMA held this big briefing. And, I'm guessing FEMA did something like this, a live briefing for Helene. But what I know is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris weren't part of that briefing. And today they interjected themselves and they were asking questions. Some of the questions, this thing was long and I was actually at home. We didn't pull the audio, but it was almost like, well, my daughter's in fourth grade, so I don't even think it was a fourth grader. It was almost like a second grader asking some of the questions just because they wanted to ask a question, so it seemed like they were on top of the situation.
See.
At one point, the president says something like, well, you know, let me ask you this. We're talking about the storm surge and the flooding, but isn't it true that the winds are also, I'm not making this, that the winds are also part of this as well?
What?
You think? It's a hurricane.
That's bizarre.
Well, I wish I was making that up, but a couple of times he had to say, anyway. Just like Dana Carvey would.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we return for the second hour this afternoon, Dave Murray's going to join us with his take on Milton. And then I also have a story about did you hear about the Mega Millions increase?
No.
Okay, we're going to see how this passes the smells test in a second. I'm old enough to remember when a Mega Millions ticket was $1. Remember that?
Oh, you're saying the price of them is going up.
The price of them is significantly.
Well, that's
and I'll have details on that. And then Ryan Goble's going to be with us. He is the captain of the Sea Trek 1, which is a charter boat near Fort Myers. He has moved his vessel upriver. He has Starlink. He was on this boat when Ian and Helene hit. He's going to kind of ride it out again. So we'll talk with him in the 4 o'clock hour here coming up. Kilmeade at 5:07. Still plenty to go this afternoon.
Get more at 971talk.com.